I thought I'd read. I'm going to end by reading a few recent poems. Recent in the sense that they were written since that book that I've been reading from has come out. But I'd like to stop and read three of the Follin prose poems. One of my reasons for reading them is simply because I love them so much. I've worked on them for 4 years. They're co-translated with a woman named Mary Feeney, a terrific translator who deserves at least a half of the credit for these translations. So the fact that I'm physically here reading them while she's in Paris shouldn't obscure any of the credit she deserves for working on these translations. And I read them because I love them so enormously. There are a vast number of good prose poems in French. It seems like a rather odd animal in English language or to American poets. But in French, there's a strong tradition of them, beginning in the middle 19th century. And you have Bertrand, Baudelaire, Valéry's written excellent ones. Any number of French poets have written them. And so that for a French poet to begin writing prose poems would be a little bit like what it would be like for a British poet, say, to begin his career by writing a sonnet sequence. But Follin wrote these from his earliest life as a poet. He was a poet who published his work late, who, until very late in his life, never came to Paris. He worked as a judge and lived in most of his life in Normandy. And very quietly, he wrote these prose poems, which are full of domestic details from the region in which he grew up. The other thing that's behind all of them, Follin was born in 1903. He died in 1971. Run down by a car on the Place de la Concorde. He had lived then through two world wars, fought on French soil, and he was behind all of these poems is the sense that the war is something that simmers as if on a back burner of the stove, and at irregular and horrible intervals, war breaks out, not some long distance away where it becomes a kind of national embarrassment, but actually right there in the village. And within 2 or 3 weeks, all the men between about 16 and 50 are gone. What you have left are servants, women, children, older men, hired hands who are debilitated in some way, and you have this suddenly strange and straitened and odd social circumstance. This is behind all of these poems. And I think one of the things that poems are about, they seem to me, though they're in no explicit way political, to be many of the best to be some of the best writing about the experience of what it's like for a whole society to be at war that I've ever read. That's one reason why there's so often the scenes in Follin's poems are, in the prose poems, are women going about domestic details, women surviving through this period, because for many of them, the men who went off, with half of them or more, won't be back. And the whole question of continuity and readjustment and moving out of the period of war and into a period of peace is something that is going to fall by a kind of terrible default into the hands and into the imaginations of these women. None of his prose poems have any titles, so of the three I'll read, they just begin. Women dishwashers would be babbling on. You could hear glasses and bowls colliding. Through unflinching window panes, you could see a large storehouse containing several wheels, one from a tricycle, another from a child's stroller, for so long, with such ceremony, pushed beneath the sycamores. Sometimes the women would stop, holding porcelain plates in their hand. They'd tilt their heads, squinting a little, trying to remember a forgotten name or a date. At their feet, the cat licked milk from a saucer. The future was nonetheless full of hideous landscapes, bloody barracks bitten by the wind, stupor in freight cars with barred doors. For the time being, it was unheard of. There was the neatness of the table settings and shining kitchen utensils, touching the softened skin of the dishwashers. These women who, in a couple of hours, would say, "It's getting dark. Let's turn the lights on. You can't see a thing in here." In only one of the 94 prose poems, almost all of the prose poems that Follin published in his lifetime that we translated. Is there anybody who's in the first person singular? At one point, there's somebody who speaks as an I. In the rest of the poems, the presence of Follin in the poems is a little bit like that of a narrator who does a voiceover in a film. You're aware that he's directing your gaze, that you're seeing exactly those things that Follin wants you to see, and in that sense, you're in very intimate touch with his personality. Or no, not with his personality, with his perceptions, which may be something even more deeply imprinted. You have almost no sense of personality, no sense of the speaker as a character. One thing that this enables him to do is to enter the lives of other people with great ease. And as he, late in his writing life, he had always written about his childhood in Normandy and about objects and people and tools that he had found or that he would find around that region. Late in his life, he began to write about things that had happened before his birth. His ability to imagine what kinds of life had been lived around a bowl that had been in a kitchen for 40 years, what kinds of continuity, what kinds of survival would surround that, the kind of thing implied a little bit by that last prose poem, made it possible for him to move further and further back in time so that he was talking about things which he couldn't himself have remembered, which he might have heard from a mother or grandmother. So that in this poem, also another feature of his ability to imagine himself being other people, which I think comes from his unwillingness to impose his own personality on the poems, is that he finds it easy to be people who are quite different from what he is in life. In many of his poems, the principal characters are women, and their interior and psychic lives are explored fairly confidently. He talks about, he seems to understand what a gardener's life is like when he's standing in a garden moving a rake, things of this kind. This particular prose poem begins in 1880, about 23 years before Follin's birth. In 1880, hair counts a lot in the impression women make. It can add to their attraction. In the morning, through a half-opened window, you see those long falls of hair, black, auburn, brown, red, blonde, that make the creature look like some enchanted animal. The hair spills all the way down to the loins, which, according to the preacher, God fathoms as easily as the heart. Straight-haired women envy naturally curly hair. They talk of it as if it were money. Oh, what thick, wavy hair she's got, they say. Raising his head from time to time to see the morning sky glint or darken, the gardener tends his beds. His rake rasps along with the noise a comb makes, full of static in the morning with the frizzed tufts coming back to life. The hair is arranged in front of a beveled dresser mirror as the smell of lilacs floats through the window. It takes concentration to get the hairpins right. There are days when strict buns refuse to be built up after you've unwoven the long braids made for hours of sleep. One other that I love, because in some ways it's not typical of Follin, it's a little story. And so often his prose poems are really meditations on objects. But this is a very strange little story. It starts with a couple walking through the woods. "We're lost," the husband says to his wife in her flowered hat. They no longer know which way to go. The night builds up. Birds fall silent. They make a wild guess. A clearing turns up. A peasant woman there shows them the right way. They're saved. The countryside is full of life again. They meet cows and calm mares. "Let's hurry up," one of them says. "Time's flying." The other replies, "I know. I know." They come to houses at the edge of town. The windows are full of haggard people saying nothing. For the couple, this is a new kind of fear. They blanch and quicken their pace. So goes the story of their life. Well, he's a very strange and marvelous poet, and I recommend to anybody who's interested by what he's doing, not only his prose poems, but his verse poems as well. And it had been beautifully translated by W.S. Merwin in a book that's available from Athenaeum called Transparencies of the World. And anybody who's interested by Follin should run down anybody who's in your way to the library or bookstore and get a hold of it, because it's a spectacularly beautiful book, full of things, the kind of book you can read over and over and over again for years with great love and pleasure.